Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Bay Area writer and solo performer Margo Gomez brings her 12th solo play, Latin Standards, back to San Francisco and to San Jose in the next few months. The show explores her childhood as the ambitious daughter of a Cuban entertainer and what it means to be a queer Latino performer in today's changing art scene. She joins us in studio for this segment to discuss Latin Standards and a life in showbiz. And welcome back to Forum, Margo Gomez.
Michael, it's so great to be back to see you. And but you know, I listen to you every day almost.
You do, and I hope it's worthy of your time and effort.
It's worthy, and I just met another Cuban.
Yeah, well, George Gascon, the district attorney, was just with us last segment. Fellow Cubana. Your father was Cuban, and this play, a lot of it is about your father. Most of it is about your father.
Yeah, this play, it's called Latin Standards, and it focuses on my father was an influencer in mid-century in New York. He produced a lot of variety shows with Tito Puente, Celia Cruz, and he was known as a comedian and a producer, but then he also wrote songs that went to the top of the charts in the Latino Billboard charts. And I wrote a show about him, and it premiered in 1996 at the Public Theater. But 20 years later, I'm doing this look at my father, a completely different lens because, well, I'm older. And so now I recognize him on so many other levels. So it's about his love songs, but it's also about jealousy and obsession and the way we all as artists have to adapt and kind of just jump on the next little, you know, raft.
Well, in fact, there's a Philip Larkin poem that sort of plays a role in all this. I can't say it on the air. But
oh, that's the,
your
yes.
Mom and dad, they blank you up, you don't necessarily know what blanked them up, so to speak. But it's that sense of lineage. But there's a celebration here, too, of a kind of showbiz lineage. And, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from that tree.
No, I mean, I have this addiction to being sort of a DIY producer, and I have to shake that. Maybe, I mean, I think I've done enough of it. So this story, Latin Standards, it's layered, and one of the layers is me actually going by my father's playbook and running a comedy series at I don't know if you've ever gone, it's gone now, but Esta Noche was the oldest Latino drag club in California, I think, that I know of, and in many parts of the country. It was built in the 70s, and I ran a comedy, like a hipster comedy series there.
That was back in 2012.
2012, yeah. And it's last few years. And why was I doing that? I had already, you know, had a little bit of L.A., you know, success and creds, and this was definitely not a moneymaker, but I was so proud of it, and I still am, and I was able to see the parallels between what my father did. I mean, through his later years when he was, you know, he was just scrambling because he used to do these grand shows in 1,000-seat teatros in New York, and then he was just doing shows in like little paella, you know, terrible paella. I mean, not good paella. These are bad paella restaurants, you know, tuna fish paella. And so he was doing little shows there.
Fish paella. There's a new concept.
Yeah.
But he was also doing stuff like with Tito Puente, and you mentioned in your show Christine Jorgensen, who was the first probably public transgender person long before Christine Jorgensen.
She's bigger than Christine.
She's bigger than
Caitlyn Jenner, and she wasn't a Republican.
Yeah.
She was from the Bronx.
Right.
She was from the Bronx. She was just a Bronx girl. And and she sold out 5 shows for my father. And I almost was going to bring photos, but I realized, come on, Margaret, it's a radio, Michael. You know,
there's a lot in the show. I would have liked to have seen some photos and a lot that comes across. Of course, your mother as well was a showbiz person and a Puerto Rican.
Yes, my mother, she would always say, Marga, you have to suffer to be beautiful. I don't care if the dress is itchy. You know, and she was also the inspiration for many of my father's sad love songs. You know, she'd say, the song was about me. I was the one walking up the steps. Anybody can write a song, Marga. I can write a song about your father. I'd call it Another Flat Tire. Everybody had that excuse back then.
From the show. You're doing it from the show.
I am doing a little bit of material.
Yeah.
Yes.
So give us a little more material. Can you give us some material about your dad?
Well, it sounds really, when I talk about all the different things that happened in the show, it sounds like, oh my gosh, this is all, here and there and all over the map. But it kind of makes sense when you do it. But part of my father's story is this great day that I had with him when he succeeded and it looked like everything was going to be rosy. And he got a job as a pitchman for Café El Pico Company, which is, we feel, not as good as Bustelo, but some people love it. So this is where my father does a pitch to the advertising agency that that works on the Latino market. You know, it's not Latinos, but they get people like my father to come up with commercials for Spanish television that was just starting up then.
He comes early in, Telemundo, pre-Telemundo.
Before Telemundo, yeah. Actually, it was Univision or Telemundo. But before that, just side note, my father worked in the real early Spanish television, which was Channel 13 in New York, before it became a PBS station, was a station that had like a day of programming for the Spanish-speaking emerging public. Okay, so this is my father going in. I try not to be too loud on the mic. Gentlemen, Willie Chevalier. Big Willie Chevalier. Big Willie Chevalier. Dave, if you go with me, we will destroy Café Bustelo for the TV. Now, imagine, empty apartment, an angry husband. He comes into the front door. He has an axe and some paper bags. Now, in the bedroom door, the wife comes into the living room. We don't know why, but she don't have time to put on clothes. So she's un poquito desnuda. You don't see too much, just a little bit. The husband, he says to the wife, "Where is he? Where is your secret lover? Tell me or else." And the wife says, "Geez, he's in the closet. Please don't kill him." Now, the husband goes into the closet. You don't see him. You just hear the sound of the axe. Thwack. Thwack. And the other guy yelling, "Oh!" Now the husband comes out of the closet. He feels good. He has worked hard. He just has a little paper bag. And he says to her, "You know what's in this little paper bag? The thing that caused all the trouble." Then the wife, she shows him a big paper bag. He looks in. He looks up at her. He says, "Café El Pico, for me. I'm the luckiest guy in the world." Okay. That's not so good, gentlemen. It's not so good, Michael. I'll try another one. A lady is pushing a baby carriage. She's pushing. You don't see the baby. She's talking to the baby. The lady is gordita, sexy. She says to the baby, "A goo goo gaga, tú sabes, baby talk." She takes a bottle of milk. She says to the baby, "Have some milk, baby." Cut to close-up. Baby, it's me in a baby dress. I taste the milk. I see it's not Café El Pico. I say, "De eso cero, si no es el pico, no lo quiero." Wah! Wah! So those are a couple of his pitches.
Those are real pitches, too. Yeah.
Yes. When my dad passed in 84, I was just, I was on the West Coast. I was starting as a comedian. And I went to his apartment, and he had lost everything. I mean, he had, you know, he was on top of the world, and then he lost it. You know, he squandered it, and there were also bad breaks. But his apartment, everything was covered with his writing. He wrote, he wrote scripts for radio. He wrote scripts for the stage. He wrote song lyrics, and it was and so what I did was, I had no money, no inheritance like that. But I took all of that writing, which was in Spanish, which I still don't understand, and I just put it in my suitcase, and I have it all in my apartment. So I always wanted to do a piece that focused on his writing. So I have a little of it, you know, as much as I can.
Well, you got the legacy, and you got the suitcase, and you've got the play.
Yeah.
Again, we're talking to Margo Gomez, Bay Area writer and solo performer. Her play, Latin Standards, comes to San Jose at February 9th to the 11th at Maukla, and it returns to Brava Theater Center in San Francisco on March 16th and runs through April 1st. She's always a delight to talk to, and you may want to talk to her, so let me give you an opportunity to do that. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786 if you'd like to join us. If you'd like to talk to Margo Gomez, questions or comments are welcome. And again, the number to call, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post any question or comment. Anything you'd like to say there, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I was just remembering, strangely enough, a moment when I was with you and some of the Bay Area listeners who go way back. I remember Mark Thompson, the weatherman, whose real name, by the way.
I love Mark.
Well, we were together, three of us at one time. This goes back probably at least a decade and a half. And he was going, Marga, Marga. He was yelling. And by the way, his name was Leibowitz, which is also the real name. You know,
Leibowitz,
a lot of Jews
Thompson.
Changed their names. John yeah. Stewart's real name was Leibowitz, too, by the way. But your dad became Chevalier. I mean, it was like that French name. You think of Maurice Chevalier.
Thanks for pointing that up, because it's true. I did just like I forgot to. I missed a step there. Yes, his name was Gomez. Or actually, that probably wasn't even his real last name, because, you know, Cubans, they'll have many, many last names. So he just picked that one because, you know. And
do you know what the real name was?
The original name? I have to look. There were like, you know, five different last names. So it might have been his mom, but, ooh, you know, for identity theft purposes, I'm not going to get into that one. But then he was discovered in Havana. This was, as Cubans say, B.C., before Castro. And he was performing at, you know, in that, the Vegas, the, you know, the strip, those casinos. And he was a lip syncer. He was a straight young man lip syncer. And, you know, he was sort of like a clown guy. I mean, he was just, you know, he was like a rubbery guy. I mean, he was, every part of my father was funny. And there was a talent scout from the Johnny Walker Scotch Company. And the guy...
But he did go for liquids, didn't he? The coffee, the scotch, what else?
Yep. Every kind of toast. And he brought my father to New York, not realizing that my father couldn't speak English at all. So, you know, he got dumped from his Johnny Walker sponsor. And then my father, it's a true story. He tried to, you know, get work in the Spanish variety shows that were happening. Nobody would hire him. He jumped on a stage. He grabbed the mic and he just started telling jokes. And that's how he started his career.
You know, what a versatile career it was, though. I mean, with singing and with songwriting and with joke telling and
yeah. But he took the stage name because he was a fan of Maurice Chevalier.
Makes perfect sense.
The Latinos love the French.
Yeah, and what about you being a queer Latina performer?
Very French.
Yeah, that's very French. Quite Gaelic, in fact. No, but I mean, the art scene here in San Francisco at one time was really burgeoning with there was great energy along
yeah.
the lines of what you were doing and so forth. It's changed.
Well, I got started as a stand-up because of a place called the Valencia Rose. And then the people who had the Valencia Rose opened Josie's after the Rose closed. But what it was a, it was just a birthplace of the out gay comic and the audience that was really hungering for a place where you could go and not feel insulted because of your sexual orientation or your race or whatever size your body was. It was a, you know, it was a way to be funny without, you know, harming anyone except for, of course, the people who were in power. We totally went after them. And
you still think you're a voice of resistance, don't you?
I
was reading a statement you made. You said your whole career has been for underrepresented women, queer folk, as you call them, people of color, and I am a voice. You're a voice of humor, too, obviously, but a voice of resistance.
Well, yes, but sort of accidentally, because what I found in my work was that I talk from my experience and I don't try to sound like anyone else. And because I am who I am, it was a radical thing to do when I started in the 80s. Now I'm a little bit, you know, out of the loop as to how the dialogue has changed in the people of color community and the queer community. But one thing that we always had in the, you know, in the days of Josie's and Valencia Rose was the we connected being a person of color and being queer and being working class. So we knew that back then. We just didn't have the language that people have now. That we were all fighting for the same thing, for fairness and social justice. We were doing that. But yes, above all, I feel that my job is to make people laugh and to try to have as wide an audience as possible.
Got lots of calls. Let's go to them. And let's get as many on as we can. Susan, we begin with you.
Hi, this is Susan, San Francisco. And Marga, I've been following you, and you've been telling your observations of life and being a female for years and making me laugh. And I wonder if you're done with the solo shows, if you're going back to stand-up, and we can expect to see you enjoy your stand-up comedy.
Well, thanks, Susan. Yes, I've been doing. I actually had a wonderful run on New Year's Eve with Greg Proops and Daya Lakshminarayanan at the Punchline. So I've been doing stand-up all along. In fact, I'll be doing stand-up tonight at the Starline Social Club for the Oakland Symphony.
Wow.
It's kind of a wild thing. But yes, I love stand-up. Even Latin Standards is sort of a hybrid of storytelling and stand-up and performance. The premise of this show, Susan, I think knows this, and Michael, is that it is my final farewell concert.
You call this your final solo performance?
Yeah. Well, no, I call it my final farewell concert or my final solo show. That is true.
Yeah.
But what I'm excited to do is do more stand-up and also push myself to write for more than one performer. So I would really like to find, I know this is like so retro, but I want to have a duo. I want to find someone to partner with and do that sort of...
Performer who's listening out there, there's an invitation. And let me thank Susan for her call and go right on to another caller. And that's you, Irma. Good morning.
Hi, it's pronounced Irma.
Irma, perdóname.
Irma.
What's up? Hey, maybe
what's up?
A person to partner with. What a great idea.
Oh,
I just want to thank
got my
you.
First
applicant.
Yeah, Irma. Oh, Irma would be great. Yeah.
I first saw you at Galería de la Raza 30-plus years ago with Culture Clash, and I've been following you ever since. And you are such a tremendous influence to Latinx and other people of color who have stories they want to put on stage or on the page. And I just want to say muchas gracias. You are a gem, and we love you, Marga. I saw an early version of this work at Monday Night Marsh upstairs at the Brava, and I haven't seen this last work, and I look forward to seeing it at Brava sometime next month. So muchas gracias.
Thank you, Irma.
Thank you, Irma.
I look forward to seeing
and
your
Latin
solo
Standards
performance.
Is what, number 12, 13?
This is my 12th solo
12th
show,
solo
and
show,
it's sort of, and it's, it'll probably be the last. I mean, I'm going to perform them all. Believe me, I'm not going to quit. I can't code, so I have to keep performing. I decided to stop with this one because I feel really satisfied. Really, the reason I got into solo performing was because I wanted to tell my parents' story. The first solo performance I ever did was a story about my mother called Memory Tricks, and that was and it premiered at the Public in 92. So last year I did it at ACT and a couple of other places, and it really held up. It's a very simple story, mother-daughter story, like, not as layered as Latin Standards, but really was, because I revisit my parents who've passed when I do the show. And
you also re-inhabit them.
Re-inhabit
you certainly
them.
Did with your father.
Yeah.
And let's get Christina, maybe an applicant, another one.
Christina.
Hi, Christina, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, Marga. I just wanted to tell you how much I was there opening night for this show, how much I loved it. And what I was fascinated by was the era you conjure up. It almost seemed to me like a Latinx equivalent of the Harlem Renaissance. Could you tell us a little bit more about that era? And has there been anything even remotely similar since in terms of Latinx culture?
Thank you, Christina. You sound a lot like the novelist Christina Garcia, but I could be wrong. But I'm a big fan of Christina Garcia, the novelist, and you seem very nice as well. So the era that my father came up in was definitely amazing and grand and glorious. He came to New York in the late 40s, and there were already the emerging Latino community was very much Puerto Rican, Cuban, Dominican, Mexican, and then from other countries. And there were these, they were like vaudeville houses. So there would be a, they would show a movie, a Mexican movie, because that was our Hollywood, and a lot of the Mexican movies, they weren't Buñuel, let me tell you this, but they kind of copied Hollywood. And then after the movie, there would be an hour-long variety show with an orchestra set up with Willy Colon or Tito Puente and all these people. And there hasn't been anything like that because for the Latino community, because Spanish television emerged in the 70s and everything just started to wipe out. But the big theaters back then were Teatro Puerto Rico, the Jefferson Theater. And I was the only child that my parents ever had together. And I would always be backstage in the wings, and I would see my godfather was a stagehand, Herman Pavone. So I would just see all the guys, you know, I would see all the cables and the curtains being pulled. And sometimes there were animal acts.
You were taking it all in.
I love backstage, maybe even more than on stage. But it was really something. I mean, these were beautiful palaces. I don't know how many of those were perhaps maybe Jewish vaudeville houses to begin with, but they were stately, palatial venues of entertainment. And, you know, now if you go to New York, you can see where those things were, but, you know, maybe there's a condo or a American Apparel or something. Yeah. And so there's nothing like that now. You know, what we had was the Latin explosion in the late 90s. You know, remember, it was Ricky
La
Martin,
Raza, La Raza, La Raza.
Jennifer Lopez and the Chihuahua. No, not even Raza. It was Vida Loca.
Viva Loca.
Taco
and
Bell.
You're listening to Forum. We're talking with Marga Gomez. And Latin Standards will be in San Jose at MACLA on February 9th to the 11th. Returns to Brava Theater Center in San Francisco March 16th through April 1st. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, simply go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And let me bring another caller on here. We're going to go to Oakland and welcome Ben. Ben, you're on.
Hey, thank you very much, Mark. I think you're hilarious, and I was calling because I wanted your advice on how to start off as a stand-up comic. Everybody tells me I should be one. I love laughing. I love being hilarious, and I like getting people to laugh, and I want to audition for you.
You don't want to be your partner. You just want to start in the and get
well,
in a career going here.
Wait, are you? Do you want to audition to be my duo partner?
Yes, I'm a.
How tall are you?
Straight. I'm a 6'2". I'm a straight male.
That could be funny.
Oh, it'd be hilarious.
I'm a straight male psychotherapist
for many years, and I have, you know, I'm adept at improvisation. So.
All right, I'll pretend that we're doing a duo, and I'll just be getting free therapy. Ben, if you want to audition, you can always reach me. Can I tell them my website?
Sure.
MargaGomez.com, so you can reach me through that. But let me tell you, for people who are, you know, I do get the question a lot, how do I get started? Well, you're in the best place to get started as a comedian. We have a very supportive comedy community. And Michael, you were asking me, and I think I went off topic before, like, you know, the comedy scene, you know, was very, you know, we had this gay venue and segment, and now what's happened is that there's been sort of an intermingling between gay and straight and funny is funny, which is, you know, which is how it should have always been. But if you want to be a stand-up comedian, there's really only one way, and that is to do it. There are so many open mics. You go to them, you can Google them, you can go on Facebook. There's different groups for comedy in the Bay Area. Oakland has, you know, many, many comedy nights. You go and you hang out, you meet people, and you get the info. It's people share tips and places to go. And then you tape your sets, you record your sets, and you don't drink till afterwards.
Actually, talking about working with gay men, there's some pretty funny shtick in Latin Standards about living with gay men.
Oh, yes. It's really one of my favorite jokes, and it never seems to fail, no matter how many decades I use it. But when I was doing my show at Esta Noche, I did it for 2 years, and I was in a relationship that suffered because my partner was not. She didn't approve of me hanging out at Esta Noche, which was a little bit notorious. But, you know, I told her there's no drugs. There's signs everywhere in the club that say no drugs. So that shows you something. And when she broke up with me, in the show I reenact that night and how one of the gay men helped me out. He said, don't worry. Don't stop crying. There's going to be another one. They're like the Muni. Don't call her. Put your phone down. Here, take these pills.
Oh, she was right. There were drugs there. Let me get another caller.
It's actually a joke.
No, I know.
I play.
We're going to go to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and welcome a caller named Al. Al, you're on.
Hi. I was just calling because I'm a aspiring queer comic from Michigan, actually, and I absolutely love seeing queer comics because I feel like we're very, very underrepresented in a field that's so predominantly white and cisgender male. But my question is, how did the queer and trans community especially impact you in your early comedy? Because I know, I mean, they were drag queens back then, but how did they influence the way you viewed comedy? And I guess, yeah, that's my question.
Marga Gomez.
I'm sorry, what was his name? Al?
Al,
thanks for calling. You know, the thing about me is that I think because I grew up an only child, I've always felt, and I'm also a Latina who can't speak Spanish, and I'm a lesbian who can't fix anything, that I've always felt a little bit outside of every group. So my persona has always been a misfit, and everything is a challenge for me. Every identity is a challenge for me. But I always speak my truth, and I try to make it funny, and I try to make it universal to everyone who always feels like they're not quite fitting in, and they have some sort of, social anxiety. When I started performing in the Bay Area, it was a very counterculture. It was...
That's signaling us that we're just out of time. But you know, she's looking like amazed because that's "De Mi Para Ti" by Trio Los Condes. That's your dad's song.
My father wrote the lyrics, and then he kind of, you know, he knew all these guys, and so he would kind of just work out the melody with them, and then they would, you know, they'd take over.
I hate to say goodbye to you, but I have to. Marga, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.